Good morning, everyone. As you can see, well, I'm a newcomer in McGill. I joined Dr. Robert's lab about a month ago. So what I chose to present is some results I obtained while I was a postdoc in Steve Crowett's lab at Wayne State University in Detroit. Basically, most of the work I'd done there was on human spermatozoa RNAs. And I'm going to focus today on some characterization using deep sequencing, basically Celexa sequencing that we did. It's going to be an overview to try to make sure it's possible that I fit in the 10 minutes. So when we talk about small encoding RNAs, most of you will be familiar with these major classes, basically microRNAs. Small interfering RNAs, also known as siRNAs, and in terms for the germ cells, it will be also the PIWI interacting RNAs, also named piRNAs. However, these are the major classes we know. They're about like 18 to 30 bases. There's been a big push, especially with the deep sequencing approaches, to identify new classes. They keep on coming. They keep on being smaller and smaller. Some new ones that are not really found here are the tiny RNAs, which are more 18 to about 18 nucleotides, and the unusually small RNAs, which are about 50 nucleotides. I'm waiting to see the itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny RNAs. I'm hoping I will be naming that class soon. Basically, they are classes of a broad range of RNAs, especially non-coding, but I want to bring to your attention that even some of the classes that we know as, you will see me saying functional RNAs, they're not coding, but they participate in protein production, tRNAs and ribosomal RNAs, but also some other classes like the small nucleolar RNAs seem to be further processed in making even smaller molecules. But for the most major achievements have been done focusing on microRNAs and piRNAs for germ cells. So there's been a lot of popular research. MicroRNAs have been very popular, and the male germ cells have not escaped to this popularity and this trend into achieving identification. We now know that these small non-coding RNAs, like microRNAs and also piRNAs, are essential for spermatogenesis and for fertility. Some microRNAs have been identified in the mouse nucleus, and there's also been some studies showing differential microRNA profiles from fertile and different types of infertile patients. I have to admit that looking at these papers really got me into questioning and having a whole bunch of questions, especially one of the studies saying that, yeah, there's not much microRNAs in spermatozoa, and most of them are found in oocytes, so why would they be there? Because they are transferred at fertilization. Why would they be there, and would they be essential? And one of the questions I've always had is, okay, yeah, fine, microRNAs are present, but is it all microRNAs that we find in small RNAs? So first question, well, with the sequencing, you have to understand that you've got many different questions that occur, maybe not necessarily when you start, but when you get the millions of sequences that come with it, many questions come. So I will try to focus on those two questions. So what is the proportion of no microRNAs that are present in spermatozoa? And that infers the second question, well, if they're not the only ones, what other types of small RNAs are present? So what we did is that we got samples from three fertile donors. We proven fertility. And for each of those donors, I constructed, I started by enriching small RNAs, because we have a limited amount of RNA, and in the CLIA lab, we like to do as much as possible with what we get. So we were able to isolate smaller RNAs apart from the longer RNAs, so that allows us to do microarray experiments, for example, and these ones were also processed separately for sequencing, but I won't talk about that today. And then it's a general process kit, where you isolate the 1830 bases, and then you just ligate adapters, and then for my part, that was done, and then I just went downstairs and gave it to the technician who was putting it on the sequencer, which we were using the Solexa GA2X. And then you get the sequences back, their job is done, and then you have to figure out what actually you have in there. So in terms of identification, what I did is that I dumped everything into a database that I created with SQL 2008 to help me out. And we, most of the studies you will see will focus on sequences that have only one alignment within the genome. And we pushed it to start checking sequences that will go and that could be coming from more than one place in the genome, just because in terms of the piRNAs, they have been identified previously as coming from repeat-associated sequences. However, most of the studies look at unique alignments, and most of the piRNAs identified in humans so far do not originate from repeat sequences. So we wanted to start checking that as well. So just some broad numbers. For the three different samples we had, we basically had like a wide array of starting number of cells, and they also give us different amounts of RNA, although they're all fertile. So the way we try to compare them is to have to bring everything back to the yield, the quantity per million of sperm cells, which isn't much. And that actually corresponds so to less than 200 bases to about 3 femtograms per cell for small RNAs and maybe about 300 for longer ones. And here's just to show you from the bioanalyzer, when you do an assay, the small RNAs between 10 and 20 and 40 nucleotides will come around here. That's for a typical sperm. And this is just when you look at somatic cells, you have a whole bunch of other peaks. Will be the 5S, the transfer RNAs, and all of these other ones that seem to be virtually absent in spermatozoa. As I said, you get millions of sequences. You don't necessarily have them all back mapping to unique locations. And that also goes with how stringent you are in your alignments. And I have to say that I use NovoAlign, and I went also in high stringency and also taking the quality of the sequence, the nucleotides that are called, into consideration. So that will have brought the number of sequences I was working with to a lower number. But when you see 500, that comes to a million, you're pretty happy with the numbers you have to start with. So what we did is I compared and contrasted all of my different samples, but what I'm going to focus on today is basically what we did actually find that was in common with all three samples. And so this is a pie donut chart. So here, basically, everything that is annotated and present in the different databases that I looked into will be in either the one class. The majority are in only one class, meaning either miRNAs, piRNAs, and as you can see, microRNAs do not, that are known at the present are not really constituting like the majority of them. For the sequences that are unique in the genome, most of the sequences come from ribosomal RNAs and also tRNAs. For the multiple mappings, the interesting thing was that the bulk of them, majority, will come from repeat-associated regions that if we had looked only at unique mappings, we would have completely missed. We don't know yet if these would be the repeat-associated RNAs that would be a part of the piRNAs that has to be further investigated. And an interesting thing is that some sequences we were not able to put into only one class, and that's another interesting thing. So some of those classes seem to be selectively cleaved. So that's just an example, especially for the tRNAs and the yRNAs. That has also been shown in some other samples that have been sequenced. In total, there's 72 microRNAs that have been identified. Some of the major clusters that have been previously found, especially X-linked, are totally absent. So is there selective retention in the human sperm that needs to be addressed? And I did also look, because I had microarray data from 24 normals for the messenger RNA. So one question was, okay, if the microRNAs are there, how are they still bound to their targets? And that's just how we basically, that's why we find them. The answer seems to be no. When I looked for all of the potential targets that are from the target scan, I could only find like 11 of them that were above background, so showing that they would not be there. Coming back to the questions, my RNAs are not really the bulk. Of course, I've been looking only at the ones that are known. I didn't go into this gray area. There are some other hairpins that need more investigation. Some other new microRNAs will probably be there, but they still have to be characterized. And then in conclusion, I just want to thank all of my other members at the K-Lab, especially Adrian, who was the computer whiz who did on-the-spot writing some applications when I wanted to speed up things a bit. And thank you.
Thanks very much. So this talk is now open for questions. I'd remind you to please go to the microphones, identify yourself, and then ask your question. While we're waiting for that, maybe I'll get us started. I think this is why Dr. Robert asked me to chair, because he knows I always have questions. So what do you do with all of these data? I mean, you've generated a lot of them. If you start to even then generate hypotheses based on all of the sequences that you have, how do you then go about testing those hypotheses? I mean, probably many of us are interested in these sorts of new applications, maybe in our own system, so we could do the same thing, generate a lot of data, but what do you do once you have them?
You go back into the samples and try to figure out if you're actually finding them. Most of the time you do, and these are fertile, so then the next question is, well, the goal of the studies that we were doing over there is trying to identify markers for fertility and see if some of those can be used. And then ideally you want to go and have different infertile samples and go and see. I would do a general microarray, a custom one, because I don't believe that the commercial ones are are valid for sperm or even spermatogenesis. I'd do a custom microarray, and then I would start maybe testing more samples because it is a lot of data and some of those may not be of interest. And then you put them out there in the public databases and then you hope that some other people will pick up some specific questions that they will be able to answer.
Geraldine Delbus from the Department of Pharmacology at McGill. I have a technical question and a functional question. My technical question is that a couple of years ago, I remember seeing a poster in a conference talking about the difficulties of extracting the RNA from the sperm, and you're talking about very, very small samples, like, 20 million of cells is not too much. So I was wondering if you could discuss this, and also if there is any evidence of the role of microRNAs in the stabilization of other RNAs that could then potentially play a role in the embryo after, and so that the father would actually bring some genomic information that way.
Yeah, the technical question is, and one of the reasons why I went into starting from the protocol we were using in the lab, because I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. And for human, we have found a way. It's a commercial kit. It's the QIAGEN kit. And that is pretty much straightforward, and it helps. You will not, the validation is maybe the biggest thing because you don't have the 18S and 28S if you do a bioanalyzer assay. And forget getting a RIN number and a quality score, you won't have that. So the way we do it is that we do our TPCRs, we're specific primers to, if we can amplify them, we can work with it. And so far it's worked for microarray and also for sequencing. Your other question as to the microRNAs, and well, from what I've seen, but I was thinking this morning of other things that I could go and check with the data. I think the micro, well, because most of them will be in the nucleus, so it's even, and they don't seem to have their targets. I think they go back in the nucleus and that they are present there to, as blueprints or, you know, spot checks to help the female machinery to go and reorganize the male nucleus. I think that's what they do, and especially with some other types of some of the other classes as well. Now, how you go and you check that, that's the million-dollar question that has kept me awake for a while now. It still does. And anybody who's got insights or, and if you ever want to do those types of analyses, and you need some tricks and stuff, come and see me.
Okay, then. Thank you for a great talk.